opinions expressed on this podcast do not necessarily reflect those of the management of Louisville.am and Veritas New Media, a Louisville.am production.
Here's how you count to eight, three, two, one. And for the eighth time, college basketball's national championship trophy is coming home to Kentucky. CATS, champs, champs, champs.
Oh, it's a sea of blue. It's beautiful.
It's awesome.
Oh my gosh, they're crazy. They're the most dedicated fans I've ever seen.
Going blue!
Big Blue Nation, show your Wildcat pride and band together with the Podcats. All the UK propaganda you can handle.
All right, welcome into another edition of the Podcats. I'm Kenny Colston. Alongside me, as always, is Chris Littrell. Hey, Chris, how's it going?
I'm good, Kenny. Yourself?
I'm fabulous. We're starting off this week right with another edition of the Podcats. How could you go wrong? Correct? I mean, that's just how I feel.
It's like that morning cup of coffee.
You're right. I don't drink coffee, but I assume that would be nice. Yeah. I would assume that'd be nice. So,
it's a delicious beverage.
Anyways, we've got another week of where it's kind of like, we kind of have news and we kind of don't. So welcome to summer. At least the weather is nice. But this week,
it's the doldrums.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of like, well, I mean, baseball is like post All-Star game, kind of like meh.
Yeah,
and if you even like baseball, and then you know, football's not. We're not quite there yet. We're getting close. It's coming. And then, of course,
they're starting to talk.
Right. And then you have this basketball trip there in August as well, and that's coming. But we're still a couple weeks off from all of that. And so quick programming note for Time Warner customers. They did strike a deal to take the SEC Network. I have Time Warner, so I'm excited. I'll be able to watch those basketball games. I think DirecTV is the only one that's still of the major ones that is not signed up. So if you have DirecTV.
Guess what I have.
You have DirecTV. So.
Yeah.
Apparently they're in negotiations, but Time Warner customers, Comcast customers, AT&T, U-verse, Dish, you all have the SEC Network, and you will all get it on its launch, which I believe is August, sometime in mid-August. But the basketball games will be on there for the Bahamas trip. So
August 14th or 16th.
Which is right when I think the basketball trip will be one of the first things they televise. So it'll be kind of interesting because that's about the time the trip is. Those games might be. The ones they televise may be the later ones on like August 18th through 20th. Mm-hmm. But anyways, that'll be one of the first few things that they air on the SEC Network. But let's get to the real news of the week, and it has to do with football, and it has to do with Mark Stoops. And normally these things are rosy and nice, and we have good things to say. And depending on where you fall, you may still not have a problem with this. But it was announced this past week that Mark Stoops would not attend the annual Governor's Cup luncheon in Louisville. That is always a big premiere of the Kentucky-Louisville game, which used to be the first or third weekend of the year. And so it kind of made sense. And even when it was the third week, it was always the two teams always played like two cupcakes beforehand. So it was still like the marquee game. It was almost like it was the opener. That game is now the last game of the season. Mark Stoops says he has too many things to do to go to the luncheon to talk about a game at the beginning of the season that is now the last game of the season. And so he's taken full responsibility and said, hey, I told him a long time ago I'm not coming. I got to do some recruiting. I got some other stuff to do to prepare for the season. I can't make it. Sorry. I don't know why we're doing it. You know, this is the last game of the season, and I'm not going to take, you know, 4 hours out of my day to travel to and from and go to the luncheon on the last to talk about the last game of the season. So, Chris, your thoughts, because I didn't get a lot of outrage from Kentucky fans. I didn't see a lot of it, but I saw a lot of other important people, a lot of media people kind of raised a stink about it. Louisville fans obviously raised a stink about it. You know, it seems like it's it's a slight. And I don't know if it's a slight at Louisville. I don't know if it's a slight at the pageantry of the Governor's Cup. I don't know if it's a slight at Bobby Petrino. It seems like a little bit of a slight, though, and I'd like to know your take on it.
It's probably a PR mistake by Stoops. You know how coaches are, and especially football coaches, it seems, whether it's college or pro, they always talk about how all they're worried about is the next game. They're not worried about the game 3 weeks from now. They're not worried about the game 2 weeks from now. They're only worried about the next game, and that's all they focus on. That's kind of the excuse that he's giving here, is that he doesn't want to waste any of his time on a game that's not going to be played until November. However, you know, if you go back and think about Billy Gillespie's time here at Kentucky, one of the criticisms of Billy Gillespie was that he just didn't have that PR skill that is necessary to be the basketball coach at Kentucky. And this is something that, you know, John Calipari obviously has. You have to go to these luncheons. You have to go to the benefits. You have to go to all those dinners, and you have to go make speeches. You have to go to Pikeville and shake hands, and you have to go down to Corbin and shake people's hands and get out there and let people come see you and hear you, and you got to let people talk to you. That's part of the deal of being, you know, the basketball coach. That's a very important part of being the basketball coach at Kentucky. But at the same time, you know, that's something that's important for Mark Stoops to understand, too, is that you have to get out there and do this kind of stuff. I mean, you're the head football coach, but you also have to get out there and do that PR for your program and for your athletic department and for the university. And I think that's something that he just kind of failed to understand at this point. This luncheon has traditionally kicked off the season. You know, I mean, this was kind of like the moment on the calendar around here where you said, okay, football season is here. The kickoff luncheon is getting ready to go down. That just kind of, you know, marks the official starting point for, you know, football season. We're getting ready to start talking about football, and it's going to be here before you know it. And I think it was just a failure on Stoops's part to recognize that. And you can't tell me that he's too busy with other things to take part in this, because I think this is one of those other things that you have to do, you know, when you're part of this rivalry. And I'm sure he's, you know, had some people tell him that. To me personally, not a big deal. The game's going to go on. But one of the things that kind of bothers me is I think this is a charity event as well. Am I correct in saying that?
It could be. I think there are elements of it that they might do like a auction or something like that. I mean, there's
isn't there a golf outing involved in this?
Yes,
in
but
this
I don't know if the coaches
well.
Always did the golf outing. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah,
maybe they did.
But when the coaches, yeah, but the coaches going there and speaking and just being part of it, I mean, that's part of it. That's what's drawing people to this thing. And when there is a element of charity involved, you know, it's awful easy, Coach Stoops, just to go spend half a day in Louisville and help these people, you know, drum up some money for whatever the charity is. I'm sure it's a good cause. I don't know, just kind of a blunder. A public relations blunder to me. That's how I see it. I forgive the guy, you know, no big deal, but hopefully going forward, you know, he will attend. Cause I think it's important. It's important to do everything that you got to do to keep this rivalry, you know, relevant. And it's a big deal around here. And I think he probably understands now that the easier or the better option would have been just to attend.
Well, I mean, to be fair, he did attend the University of Kentucky Louisville Alumni's chapter. They also have a big before-the-season lunch. And so he did attend that this last Friday. He did Rotary Club in Lexington. He's done some other things. And I wonder, yes, I think, is there some, there's got to be a way to change this, though, because I get the point that you don't want to talk about a game. To be honest with you, I bet you he hasn't even thought of the Louisville game. I bet you he hasn't, because he has 11 other games to worry about first, you know. And I'm not saying that the opener against some weak team, you know, that may be his focus. Probably not. He's probably focused on the third or the fourth game, whatever that first big game is, you know, that Vanderbilt game, the must-win game for them. It's probably what he's really focused on. I don't know that he's long-term super focused on the Louisville game right now, despite it being a rivalry game. So I get, what is he going to say? He's going to sit up there and say, we haven't really focused on Louisville. And everyone in the Louisville media is going to view that as a slight. You're not focused on your main rival? Well, hell no. There's 11 other games before this. So I get that. Do I think he'll probably go in future years? I think you're right. I think he's learned a little lesson. But there's got to be a way to change this so that it's no longer at the front of the season. And I get that maybe you didn't know the scheduling change was going to happen and didn't, you know, this stuff has been like clockwork and you couldn't change. But you got to be able to change it now. I mean, it's got to be somewhere, you know, and I don't know how you would do it, but you can't kick off the season with talking about the last game of the season. I think there's got to be, you know, it's branded with the game, the Governor's Cup. It's got to be differently branded or something from here on forward, because otherwise I don't see a whole lot of value in Stoops going. He's still talking to a Louisville crowd by doing the alumni chat, you know, the Louisville alumni chapter. He's going to Rotary. He's going to some of these other. He's going to Northern Kentucky and speaking. So he's still getting these people. He just doesn't have to sit and listen to the Louisville crowd when he goes to it.
I mean, you got a good point there about the value of him going, and that made me think, like, what is the value of even having this luncheon in July when the game is, you know, your 10th or 11th game in November? Maybe they should do something like, and I mean, this is maybe kind of far-fetched because I know how scheduling goes, but you know, if it's a big deal, make sure both teams have the Saturday off before this game, and then you can schedule something like that when there's going to be some hype and hysteria surrounding this game. You know, and for a coach to say, well, I'm not focused on that game right now, that's some coach speak, really, because what this thing is, it's for the fans, it's for alumni, and it's for these organizations to be able to raise some money off of this game. So it's not like these coaches are going to have to go up there and talk about their strategy going into the game and how is Kentucky going to beat Louisville and how's Louisville going to attack, you know, Kentucky. It's not like the coaches have to be focused on the game and the game plan that they're going to use going into that game. It's just they get up there and they talk and people get to ask them some questions and be around them and hear them speak. So the whole element of I don't want to do this because I don't want to be focused on that game, that's kind of some crap. But at the same time, you brought up a good point. What is the value of having this thing in July when the game is going to be played in November? So maybe it's going to be up to the people who run this luncheon or who plan this luncheon and put it on. Maybe it's going to be on them to change this thing up. That's a good point.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I would like to see it continue because I think overall it's pretty good. And it was always fun. This used to – the luncheon used to always kick off for as long as I can – the last couple of years, you know, as long as Kentucky and Louisville have been playing either the first or the third game. This always like was the official kickoff to football season. You know, you had this, and then like a week or two later, practice started. And this is when you really started to get – almost daily updates on football, and it was all mostly couched around Kentucky Louisville, and so it served a great purpose. I think it needs to be repurposed. I also wonder, you know, and this is just speculation on my part. I know Stoops and Charlie Strong at least had a good professional relationship, and I wonder if Stoops and Petrino don't. I don't have any background knowledge other than, you know, Petrino put a whooping on us last year at WKU. I don't have any knowledge that why these two wouldn't like each other for one reason or another. But I wonder if it wasn't, Stoops didn't want to be on the same stage with that guy. You know, I don't know. I wonder how if that had anything to do with it, that, you know, all this talk about, you know, it's the last game of the season and blah, blah, blah. And really, he just didn't want to get up there and sit next to Bobby Petrino for an hour.
You know, that's a really good question. I don't know if there's any history between those two guys. I mean, the Stoops family has, you know, been in the game for quite some time. I don't know if maybe there was a Petrino Stoops, you know, showdown at some point that maybe involved one of the brothers or something like that. That's a really interesting point. I don't know what Bobby Petrino's reputation is amongst the other head coaches, if they think he's a snake and a weasel. That's a really good question. That'd be worth looking into. You would think at the same time, though, that these guys are highly paid professionals, and maybe sometimes you gotta do some stuff that you don't want to do and maybe be around some people that you don't want to be around. But that's a very interesting point. I don't know what the relationship is between those two.
Well, let me tell you, if Mark Stoops ever comes on this show, we'll ask him. I'll ask him, do you hate Bobby Petrino? He'll sit down and be like, we have a great guest today. We have football coach Mark Stoops. Coach Stoops, do you hate Bobby Petrino? And then we'll just sit here. If we have to sit here through 30 minutes of silence, we'll sit here for 30 minutes of silence. But we'll do that.
Yeah, we'll press him.
So if the small chance that we were going to get Mark Stoops on this show just went out the window. But anyways, I think it's interesting. They've got if they can rebrand it, I'm totally for this. It's fun, you know. It's a lot of lawyers and insurance guys. I think you're right. Get out there and go play golf, and they get to watch like the governor like tee off. Maybe he plays. I doubt it. You know, but it's fun. It's like a day for people who only like half work for a living, like lawyers and insurance people and sales. It's a good time for them to like shake hands and eat an overpriced meal and get to shake hands with the coaches. So I hope they learn how to rebrand it. I'm not holding my breath, but
just a quick update. It is a charity event, and it raises money for Dare to Care, whatever that is.
Yeah, it's a food bank, so it's still, you know, they need to preserve that. They need to preserve that. They need to find a way to continue to do this. It's not relevant if it's just one coach, but
I'll bet you that Mark Stoops cuts a check to Dare to Care before this is all said and done.
Oh, probably, or something. I mean, it depends on how big his blowback is. I think it's largely died down. He's apologized for it, put it on himself. He might end up cutting that check. He should cut that check anyways. I mean, it's a notable charity, but yeah, you're probably right. I mean, something's going to have to be done. If it comes out that like sales were depressed because Mark Stoops wasn't showing up or people canceled their tickets and it's not raising enough money, he's probably going to have to cut that check. But it's a good event. It's for a noble cause. They need to find out how to repurpose it. I personally don't have any problem with them skipping it as is right now, other than if it hurts the charity efforts. I wouldn't want that. But otherwise, I don't get why you spend a month before the season even starts talking about the last game of the season. There'll be plenty of time to talk about that last game of the season. Moving topics, but staying in the coaching arena, this week, Pete Thamel of Sports Illustrated had a pretty good article on Charlie Strong, and I'll preface it by saying even when he was at Louisville, I like Charlie Strong as a coach. I'm not saying he's the best coach in the world. I don't know that yet. Not even sure that he's top 10, but I think he has the potential to be a very, very good coach. He's now at Texas. He's cleaning up that mess, kicked like seven dudes off or suspended or dismissed seven dudes in the last week. So he's really trying to turn that program around. Won't happen in a year. May not happen in 2 years. I hope they give him the patience that he deserves there. But anyways, Thamel does the Charlie Strong story, which we've seen a few times before if you've been paying attention. And it's pretty much the everybody under the sun passed up on Charlie Strong until the great God, Tom Jurich, gave him his opening, and the rest is history. And there's also got some other thing about what makes Charlie Strong's tick, how he got his work ethic, you know, growing up, how he got his start in coaching. It's a pretty good story, but there's quite a bit that, you know, is like, oh my gosh, if it wasn't for Louisville, Charlie Strong would still be that poor black man with a white wife toying away as a defensive coordinator, never getting a head coaching job. Maybe that's true, but I doubt it. And he lists off about six schools that had a chance at Charlie Strong in past. And he doesn't mention any of the big ones, because if you remember, Charlie Strong was the defensive coordinator in 06 and 08 when Florida won those national championships, Urban Meyer as the head coach. And they had some stout defenses during that time. And the guy deserved a head coaching spot. But I believe Mississippi State interviewed him. A few other high-profile SEC schools interviewed him. And he didn't get the job. And the rumor at the time, true or false, was is that black coach, white wife, never going to happen. And not in the SEC. I mean, we had Sylvester Croom, but that was black dude, black wife. But black guy, white wife, couldn't happen in the racist SEC. And there's probably some sad truth to that at certain schools. It just wouldn't fly. I don't know what schools there are, but there's probably that sad truth. But one of the schools, Thamel doesn't list any of those schools when he, you know, the Mississippi States or Auburn or any of those when he's listing the schools. He mentions Kentucky, which sirens went off in my head because I'm like, when the hell was Charlie Strong ever a candidate at Kentucky? And besides Mark Stoops and Rich Brooks, when's the last time Kentucky's had an opening in the last decade plus? And I'm thinking, okay, when they hired Stoops, Strong was already at Louisville, and he had turned down Tennessee. So would he have turned down Tennessee and still gone to Kentucky? You know, would he have been willing to go Kentucky, and Kentucky was just like, oh, no, you've been at our rival, and, you know, black coach, white wife, which is how Thamel couched all this, so we won't hire you. It's like, despite you beating us at our rival, we won't hire you, which that seemed BS. I don't count Joker Phillips because that was the fad of head coach in waiting. There was literally no search. I mean, they just promoted him from within. Also, Joker Phillips, black head coach, white wife. So there you go. I mean, to not so Kentucky had already had that, so it's not like they would have rejected that with Charlie Strong. So we go back to Rich Brooks. In 2000, he was hired in 2003, and so
yes.
My memory serves me that Rich Brooks was like a Hail Mary hire. Is that how you remember Rich Brooks kind of being? I mean, that they had struck out on a lot of guys, and Rich Brooks was kind of like the last guy hanging around.
Actually, I think what happened, Rich Brooks and Mitch Barnhart had worked together previously or had some type of relationship. And Mitch Barnhart hired Rich Brooks as a consultant to help the athletic department find a head coach. Now, this is Guy Morris, who was the head coach, I believe it was right after Hal Mumme. This was early 2000s, and Guy Morris was having some success at Kentucky. Looked like they had kind of turned a corner and were going to improve, and then Guy Morris bolted. Just resigned and took the head coaching job at Baylor, which was his alma mater. And, I mean, at the time, everybody was just devastated because Guy Morris was a really likable guy and seemed to be doing a good job. So that's when Barnhart hired Rich Brooks. I don't know if they were together at Oregon.
Yes, it was Oregon.
I'd have to look into that.
Yeah, it was Oregon.
Okay, I couldn't remember if that's where Barnhart was. But, yeah, there was a previous working relationship between the two. And Brooks was hired on as a consultant to help Barnhart and the team there find a new head coach. And the way I remember it happening was that Rich Brooks, after, you know, spending some time looking at some candidates and gathering some information, Rich Brooks went to Barnhart and just said, I'll take the job. What about me? You think I'm putting my name in the hat right now. And that's how Rich Brooks got hired. Was he basically just asked for the job as a consultant, and Barnhart hired him. So this would have been back in, like you said, probably 2002, before the 2003 season. And, you know, Charlie Strong, he interviewed for the job and interviewed for several jobs and didn't get the Kentucky job. But it wasn't, you know, as much the fact that Kentucky didn't want to hire him. I guarantee it had nothing to do with the fact that his wife was white. I think it was that when Rich Brooks expressed some interest in the job, Mitch Barnhart jumped all over it and hired him because Rich Brooks had decades of experience, you know, coaching college football. He'd spent some time in the NFL. He was the coach of the Rams for just a couple years. And, you know, at that time, 2003, I think it was a pretty wise choice. I think anyone would have made the same choice to hire Rich Brooks over an unproven, as far as head coaching goes, an unproven candidate like Charlie Strong. So, you know, we talked about this last week when we were talking about SEC Media Days, how members of the media, they don't know what the hell they're talking about. Like a guy down in the beat writer for LSU can write an article about UK, and he is not going to know any more. He's probably going to know less than the average UK fan who lives up here in this area. And that's just how it is. These guys, just because they have a job publishing articles in newspapers and online, it does not make them experts by any stretch of the imagination. And you see it all the time. So for a guy like Pete Thamel to just, you know, sit down and write this article, who knows how much research he did about all this. He just put together something and SI puts it out there. So I don't put a lot of credence in this in the first place. I think the whole furor over Charlie Strong having a white wife, man, I have a hard time believing that really hindered him to the extent that Pete Thamel's trying to say that it did. I mean, it's 2014. I guess we're going back 10 years, but still 2003. I mean, come on. It's not like it was, you know, they're trying to find a replacement for Bear Bryant or that it was like 1955 in Birmingham, Alabama or something like that. I mean, we've kind of come pretty far when it comes to stuff like that. You know, and another thing is, you know, if you read that article, my God, you'd think that, here's Charlie Strong, this guy that's got, you know, 3 PhDs and one of the smartest guys in the world, but he's stuck, you know, hanging off the back of a garbage truck, picking up people's garbage because he just can't get a break and he can't get a job. Let's keep in mind that when you're a defensive coach in the SEC or you're a defensive coordinator in the SEC, I'd say Charlie Strong was probably making somewhere around $200,000, $250,000 a year when he's the defensive coordinator at Florida. You know, he was at South Carolina. He was at Notre Dame. The guy was making a bunch of money. The guy had a high-profile job. He was doing well. So to make a big deal out of the fact that, you know, he just couldn't find a program that wanted to make him, you know, in effect the CEO of the whole deal. Well, I mean, that happens to a lot of people, whether you're black, whether you're white. I mean, there's a lot of hard luck stories out there. So, you know, for Pete Thamel to try and paint this picture that Charlie Strong just couldn't catch a break and he's such a great guy, but just, you know, everything was lined up against him. I don't know. I think that's pushing it a little bit. Charlie Strong has had some really good jobs and has made a lot of money for a long time before he finally got the head job at Louisville.
Right. Yeah. I mean, he's farther along than a lot of other coaches, although I do believe that he was probably held down a little longer than he should have been. I mean, a defensive coordinator who's got two national championship rings and they basically won those rings on defense probably should have had a head coaching job after 2008. I don't know why he didn't immediately get one, but that being said.
Well, you know, I was just going to say real quick in that article, Pete Thamel himself even talks about how, you know, communication skills aren't one of Charlie Strong's strong points,
right.
No pun intended. And there is some talk out there about how the UK, you mentioned this earlier, how the UK job, the interview went horribly. So, I mean, that's gonna factor in. And let's say, you know, I'll put it out there. When you listen to Charlie Strong talk, whether it's on a commercial or an interview, he's not the most eloquent guy in the world. And that might have been a factor in his not getting a job. And that's going to happen to you whether you're applying for the head coaching position at the University of Kentucky or whether you're applying for a job, you know, at, you know, you name it, just company X where you're going to be sitting at a desk in front of a computer all day. If you don't have good communication skills, that's gonna work against you.
Right. So to backtrack a little bit, in case we got lost in the weeds there a little bit, you know, apparently when I saw this, I was surprised. I didn't even know Strong was a candidate, but apparently he was a low level candidate for the O2 job before he won the national championships at Florida. It was a still well known defensive coordinator. But hadn't won a title yet with Florida. That happened in 06. This opening was 02. And so I sent an at message to Thamel on Twitter. Hey, when did Charlie Strong apply for the Kentucky job? Wasn't aware. Think he's a good coach. Never got a response. But asked a few of the other beat writers, and they were like, maybe in 02, but we're not really sure. And then finally, Matt Jones comes out and says, yeah, he was a candidate in 02, but his interview was so god-awful that he stopped being a candidate. And, I wonder if, that could have been a whole reason, and it's couched with these racist undertones at these other schools. But that being said, it may have taken so many failed interviews for him to really hone his communication skills, and I don't even know if you could call him honed at this point. And then at Louisville, you know, a whole nother job, and he's way better than he was previously. If you remember when he took that Louisville job, he's come a long way. But it was very interesting. I'm personally not that up. I like Charlie Strong as a coach. I don't know if he would have been ready in 02. If you remember, Brooks almost hit rock bottom, and some would argue did hit rock bottom before he finally turned it around. And if you had given Charlie Strong something like that, I wonder if he would have been able to. You just never know. I mean, guys in different situations, it's a lot easier to pull up a struggling Louisville in a Big East than a struggling Kentucky in the SEC. And so you just wonder. But that being said, it's a fun game. What if Charlie Strong would have taken it over Kentucky in 02, would they have, you know, turned around quicker? You never would have gotten Joker Phillips. But, you know, it's a whole what-if game. But I wanted to bring that up in case you all haven't seen it. That was an interesting that he actually was a candidate at Kentucky. But, you know, it wasn't in, like, 08. It wasn't like they interviewed other people when they hired Joker Phillips. It wasn't this last go-around. And it was a decade ago. And I don't think he was probably ready for any head coaching job at that point. But we wouldn't know that for sure. We weren't in the room, but it is apparently leaked that he was a candidate in 02 and that the interview was god-awful, to put it nicely. But that's all I have for this week. Chris, anything else that you've got on your plate? Did you want to get off of it before we wrap it up?
Oh, I think we've covered pretty much everything for a late July episode.
All right. Sounds good. We'll end this as we always do. Go Cats.
Go Cats.